The last bastion of monetization is human advice. That can shrink, but it can't shrink to zero. Being that person you can call upon at any given time around those decisions will never go to zero.
You want to grow and go and get there. Sometimes upwards, sometimes nowhere. You've got the ideas, you're looking up at the clouds. But how do you start standing out of the crowd? So build it with us from the ground up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to From the Ground Up. I'm Zach Conway. I'm here with Kelsey McKenna. Kelsey, I'm excited about the episode today because I think we're talking about a topic that we kind of swirl around on previous episodes, and this is a chance to kind of hone on an issue as it relates to tech. But I know you have a stat to kind of frame it up for us, so why don't you jump to that?
Yeah, so I was reading an article that referenced the Kitsy's research on advisor technology, the 2023 survey, and what it mentioned was that they found that the average advisor only turns over tech systems at a 6% rate, which equates to an average holding period of 16 years for any particular tech tool. So I just found it interesting with some of the conversations that we've been having around innovation within the industry and what tech could do to kind of push the industry forward to meet the demands of this like next or new generation of clients that everyone is trying to capture. And we all know that I think it's very well known that the next generation is expecting a slightly different experience from their advisor. And often it's framed as a more digital experience as well. So, and there's a lot of talk about AI, there's a lot of talk about integrations right now and data, and how can advisors be using this to push their firms forward into the future and grow really by acquiring that next gen. So that is kind of where we want to jump off from today. But I'm very excited to have our guests here as well.
Yes, thankfully, we have somebody with us that can help us understand this gap, right? We have exactly what you just said. We have demographics of new investor clients that want a better experience, an experience that's driven by technology, but advisors are keeping the same thing for 16 plus years in their businesses. So why is that going on? And the guy we have with us today is a guy named Tony Stieck. I had the pleasure of meeting him out in the industry, basically out on the conference circuit. I think initially at a conference called Market Council out in Las Vegas. And luckily, we get to sort of bump into each other across the industry with our peers, which is always helpful. What I knew right away, so first impression with meeting Tony was this guy clearly knows the industry really well, super talented, knows what's going on in the industry, but also kind of beamed a purpose-driven approach to what he was doing in the industry. As he talked about the industry, it wasn't how do we sell better for the sake of selling better. It was how do we solve problems for the sake of solving those problems and trying to push the industry forward. The other first impression was this guy is, I don't think even arguably, I think he is the best dressed person in the industry, which I don't know if there's a low bar there or not, but either way, I think that's part of his credentials. But beyond the wardrobe, I dug into Tony's expertise, and I'll kind of read through your background, Tony, because it's quite impressive. So 15 plus years in financial services, including leading the marketing group at Bank Mutual. Later, you were at InvestCloud, which acquired AdviceSent, the global financial planning software developer of NaviPlan, Profiles, and Figlo. And there as chief operating officer, you led North American sales, marketing, professional services, customer success, and support. So really the whole life cycle. Ultimately netting Tony the recognition by wealthmanagement.com as chief marketing officer of the year and obtaining the inaugural Think Advisor Luminaries Executive Leadership Award. Most recently, Tony served as Chief Revenue Officer at Entrustity, which is a modern digital-first custodial platform. But as we were talking about before we started recording, he is recently a free agent. So on the market, thinking about what's going to happen next in his career. Maybe we'll touch a little bit on that as well. But with that, Tony, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Wow, what a kind introduction. Zach, I owe you $20 for that one, I think.
Yeah, we take payment however you want to send the payment. That's fine.
As it relates to the wardrobe, I always say it's all pomp, no circumstance, but we'll see how that shakes out today.
Yeah, it's you got to keep it up. I would imagine too, you know, it's now people that know that about you, you have to really be focused on that when you show up. It's part of the gig. Tony, speaking of seeing you at conferences, and, you know, being able to see each other and kind of talk about the industry. I think most recently we saw each other at a conference called T3. So Technology Tools for Today, T3. It's known in the wealth management space as kind of the go-to for what's going on with technology today for advisors. And back to Kelsey's stat and the topic we want to dive into about, there's all of these new challenges, all of these new demands from new demographics of investors. Generally speaking, it's about they want a better experience that's digital focused or digital first. And my question is a loaded question to kind of kick us off on the topic. Why are there not 10,000 advisors at a conference like that, or every CTO for every RIA across the industry? And by the way, this is not a knock on T3. It's an incredible conference. There were, you know, a lot of attendees, but given the challenges of the industry as it relates to adoption of technology, yeah, why is not every single person in the industry not there trying to figure out what's going on? So I'll pass it to you with that very loaded question.
Sure. That's a great question. And I'll just start by saying this. I travel quite frequently to conferences, and they're definitely, they all have their own thing, right? They all have their own kind of like value add, if you will. But most of them are driven by content, right? And the ability to get CE credits or whatever it is, right? And maybe you have like a conference that is comprised of users of a particular software, or maybe part of a network, right? T3 has positioned itself very differently in the industry. And first of all, I consider Joel to be a very good friend. And Joel has kind of set off on this mission to create almost like a marketplace of technology, like a bazaar of technology, where anyone who kind of is the decision maker or the buyer of technology should be on an annual basis at this event, because they are seeing the tip of this, they're seeing what's happening, where the industry is going as it relates to technology. There is no conference in this circuit, in this industry, that has the amount of technology options available to review, not only at the trade show floor, but also the presentations. A lot of times people are kind of like, they're standoffish to that. They don't want presentations that are a sales pitch, if you will. But the reality is, I want to sit down sometimes and I want to hear them out. I want to hear them talk for 45 minutes around why their platform is better, or why their, where they're going in the industry is where I should be going as an advisor. So I think it's a great question you ask. Why aren't there 10,000 CTOs there? Because they should be, because quite frankly, that is the place to get the most up-to-date information on technology, the newcomers, the existing platforms, and where they are going in the industry.
Kelsey and I talk a lot about this issue of, you know, this segmentation in the RIA space, right? And if you really kind of boil it down, you have bigger legacy firms and you have the, let's just say, sort of up and coming, growing, smaller independent firms. And what I think is interesting sometimes, so they have different needs in general, but as it relates to pain, like at the end of the day, you're going to, you know, not keep the same thing for 16 years, as Kelsey just said at the beginning in that stat, because there's enough pain to make a change. There's enough pain, your inability to grow, an inability to do whatever. And I've always gotten this sense that maybe they just don't, especially for legacy firms, on certain issues, they just don't feel enough pain. If you're a cash flowing, you know, successful for the last 40 years, let's say, RIA, why do I need to spend a couple thousand dollars to go to Vegas and look, walk through the bazaar of new technology that's available? And it's kind of concerning, because those firms in our mind are, well, they're either going to be there or they're not, but I think they all want to be there long term. But for whatever reason, they just, I don't know, they don't believe that there's not enough pain, or maybe it's that the changes that we think are happening, they don't believe in as much. I don't know if you have thoughts on what is it? Like, what, at the end of the day, what's not motivating enough to a firm like that to go show up and figure out what's going on? I don't know if you have a sense of that.
Sure. I'd like to break this question down into two answers. I'll start with the RIA side, the buyer side, if we will. There's an incredible amount of success in that space, right? The success of growth. And to Kelsey's original statistic, 16 years, right? Many of these firms, I feel it's a bit of, I guess I'll be the one to take the gloves off because I'm currently unemployed, but I think there's a bit of hubris, right? About like the way things have worked for the last 20 years are good enough, right? I've grown my firm from, let's just say, zero to $4 billion or zero to $250 million, whatever it is. Therefore, why would I change something, right? When I go in and consult these firms, when I help these firms, I say, you're leaving money on the table. Right? That's the reality is if you fail to innovate, it's not that you won't continue to grow. It's the speed at which you will grow. I think that's what people need to recognize is that technology is a complementary tool for advisors to grow faster, to be more efficient. So I think that's number one, is a bit of hubris or a bit of like, it's worked out for us so far, why change now, right? And that's being short-sighted to where the industry is going as it relates to the modern investor. But I would challenge them to say, you're leaving money on the table. On the side of the technology, again, I'll take the gloves off. I think a great deal of these larger players are relying on inertia. They're relying on the fact that it's too painful to make these changes. Therefore, they don't need to invest in R&D, right? They just need to keep you sticky, 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 maintaining your data or what have you, right? The pain of changing. I think that is an indictment in and of itself because these technology platforms are relying, again, on inertia, right? And what I see is, you know, back to your quite frankly, wonderful kind of assessment of who I am as a mission-driven individual. Part of my goal is in this industry is to shed light on those modern technology solutions that are far superior to the incumbent legacy technologies, but they don't have the marketing or the bandwidth or the ability to kind of celebrate that message to the extent that they have to. So I believe that we need to do that. And I do believe that T3 does that, right? I do believe there's firms out there that do that. But the reality, so back to answering your question, on the RIA side, it's a bit of hubris as it relates to what are you leaving on the table without modernizing? And on the technology side, it's the inertia. It's the goal of making it too painful to make that shift.
Tony, so I'll double down with you and say hubris is part of it, right? It's, or underneath that is, I don't know, a lack of belief that the data is the data. Or, you know, that these scary things are further on the horizon than everyone might be saying they are. So, you know, for example, the generational transfer of wealth, right? We've now been talking about it for a decade. And I think these firms are kind of like, well, we're not really feeling it yet. Is it really a thing? Should we really be that scared of it? You get this cognitive dissonance thing of like, I don't know, it's not really hitting my bottom line yet. So is it really that big of a deal? Even though logically, I think these firms hopefully know that it is, they're not feeling it quite yet. I guess to your point, like you've been in the seat selling into these firms and trying to get firms to wake up to these big, you know, shifts and trends and not, you know, get to the cliff and fall off the cliff. Like at some point you're going to feel the pain. You've been in the room, right? To your point, you need to convey that this is real. It's coming. You need to adapt now. Like put us in that room, I guess. What clicks with firms? You know, what are the words you use? What clicks with firms to actually say, oh yeah, I didn't feel this in my last review meeting, like last hour or whatever with my, you know, 65-year-old clients, but it is real. What gets these firms to actually acknowledge that this is actually happening?
So it's funny you bring that up, the generational wealth transfer, because you're right. We've been banging this drum for a decade and like, it feels like nothing's happened. Now there are some individuals out there that don't believe this wealth transfer will happen, which is fascinating, by the way, because there's just simply too much money sitting in these accounts to actually see or witness that transfer. Now I don't have the statistics in front of me, but we all know that 9 times out of 10, at least, the recipient of the transfer will fire that advisor because that advisor has failed to reach out and attract that individual, right? That modern investor. And so the words we use to kind of encourage a platform modernization is legacy. Is your firm has been built from the ground up and you've worked very hard to achieve these milestones of a, you know, 250 million, a billion, et cetera. What is your legacy for the next generation of your employees, right? What is the legacy that you're going to embark upon when you choose to step away from the business? Are you going to leave something that's ready and modern for those next generation of investors? Or are you going to be like, not my problem, I'm moving on, right? So I think legacy works a lot to think about that. But also, the tides are shifting. That's the reality. Modern event, you're seeing it, right? I mean, Zach, I was around back when the first robo-advisor came to existence, right? And then the second one showed up and the third showed up and everyone's saying the rise of the robo and advisors are going away, right? And so I think there's a bit of that problem is we're getting this whole like crying wolf where, robo-advisors didn't do it.
Yeah.
AI is not going to do it, right? The wealth transfer is not going to do it. But the reality is there's a certain point where the wolf is going to show up. And so we need to kind of express that very clearly to these RIAs to modernize their tech stack and say, what was good back then is not good now. That's the reality. But I want to say one more quick thing on this topic. And you mentioned it a bit. There is a bit of a challenge we have with advisors today. Every advisor, I believe, they started this career or it's their second career, whatever it is, because of the nobility of offering advice and helping people make their ways through their lives financially, right? That's very noble. That's really awesome, right? And they've always been, that's what motivates them and drives them. The reality is the advisor today has to be a technologist. And they're like, but I'm not. Like, that's not what I did. That's not what I signed up for. But the reality is we have to be technologists, right? We have to start thinking from a technology lens and also to shed the fear of taking those risks, right? That was, you mentioned that, scared of kind of modernizing because people are scared. Like, what if I make the wrong move? Right? Or what if I fail to do what I'm setting out to do? We need to kind of shed that fear because the world around us is moving so fast, technologically speaking. And we as advisors need to accept the fact that we too need to begin moving that fast because the modern investor is expecting something far different when it comes to technology around personalization, customization, and what type of advice they want to receive from their advisors.
This is maybe.
I was just going to add, like, I think from the, on the tech side of what you're mentioning, Tony, it is also one of the biggest difficulties on innovating within the industry from a tech perspective is the lack of understanding of the real problem. So like Zach and I talk about this a lot. So the robo advisor, the fear-based selling that has happened historically in this industry, I think it has kind of caused this situation where everyone says the same thing almost. So you like you go to a conference and everyone's like, I'm going to solve your growth problem. I'm going to solve your experience problem or whatever it is. But there's a lack of understanding of the root cause of the problem. And so then the tech tools also can't like rise up to meet the true demand because the consumer or the customer, in this case, advisors, aren't even clear necessarily on what the problem is themselves. And they've been putting up with a lot of like crap basically for so long. Like when I look at how the advisors I work with are working their processes and workflows and dealing with custodians and dealing with like these legacy tools and the lack of integration and the lack of consistency of data and the amount of people you have to hire to even scale this up. Like there's just so much there. There's so many problems there that it's so shocking to me that there isn't more clarity around here's truly a problem to solve that is a widely recognized problem that if we just solved it with a technology, it would then, you know, it would really make a difference if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And like that's part of the problem is there's a lot of finger pointing, especially yeah. It relates to like data and integration. Like it's like, oh no, it's RIA's fault. Oh no, it's this person's fault. Like yeah. there's all of that, right? And that's, so what's the root cause? I will say this, as the technology providers, as seeds, and as where I've been, the idea also is like, how are we making sure they're maximizing the use of the software?
Right.
I see so often advisors go to these shows and see a shiny object, purchase it, mm-hmm. and then not know how to implement it or only use 10% of it, right? And that's a bit of a problem too, as many of these advisors feel like, well, I bought the software. You told me it was going to help. But the reality is perhaps the adoption was poor, implementation was done poorly, or you're just not leveraging the tool to the best. So I think there is a bit of onus on everybody to improve experience. But as the technology vendors, the providers, we need to make sure we're helping them onboard correctly, implement correctly, and making sure they're maximizing the value and the use of the tool. Then the ROI is so much easier to rationalize or justify to continue using the tool. So I think I call it the finger point at the beginning, we do need to do better on our side as well to make sure these advisors are leveraging the tool correctly.
Yeah, 100%.
That's huge. And that is, you know, to some extent, the premise of this podcast, where so to put the blame back on the tech firms instead of the RIAs for a second, you know, we talk about how as an RIA, you need all these great processes and, you know, what's the customer experience going to be, all of these things. But the tech firms, I don't think have done a great job at explaining, as Kelsey pointed out, number one, like, what is the root problem here and how does the tech attack that rather than like the surface level thing? But then shepherding it through the whole life cycle. Like I read in your bio, Tony, sales, marketing, professional services, customer success, onboarding, support. If the tech firm doesn't get that right, like, okay, here's the root problem of your issue. Here's how we solve it. But also here's exactly how we solve it. And here's how it fits into your process. And here's maybe where your process needs to change a little bit. All this silver bullet BS of we're going to solve growth, we're going to solve this, we're going to do whatever is BS, right? And I'm sure you've seen it where people buy the thing because it's shiny and it's at a conference or whatever. And then it falls flat and then tech gets a bad reputation and the cycle continues of, all right, whatever I've had for 16 years, I'm going to keep it because like that thing I tried sucked. Mm-hmm. And so like Kelsey and I from the seed side, when we go into a firm, there's this like mutual assessment process that needs to happen. Do you have the right process in place? Where exactly do we fit? What will you need to change? And we have to go along for the ride. After they sign a contract, we're in there, right? We're as much a consulting firm as a technology solution. Anyway, I think that's, you know, we can all improve on that as technology solutions. So that people really believe that what we're providing is actually meaningful.
Well, that's how you make the product. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Tony.
No, I was just going to agree. And like at Navaplan, like certainly customer success, onboarding was all important. Implementation was important, but we set off on a mission around contextual help. How can we simplify the software to such a degree that A, you don't need to call us, right? But B, if you were going to call us, maybe the contextual help within the application itself is going to prevent you from calling us, right? So there's like what we built in the latest iteration of Navaplan and the client experience was around, we built this really cool tool called Guided Retirement, and it took two data points, right? And from that, it could pretty much surmise how much money you'd need in retirement. And that's what are you making today and how old are you? And we can kind of extrapolate out based on big data, artificial intelligence, everything else, basically what you need in retirement across the spectrum of, you know, medical, taxes, leisure, and I forget the other one, but it's been a few years since I've been there. But all the calculations, everything that was generated in this platform was contextually, there's help contextual, right? So you can hover over something and say, this is how we calculated this, or this is why you got to this. Because we realized that they don't want to call us. They don't want to pick up the phone. Like, so how can we make the technology so simple and delightful, even though it's yet complex in what it provides, right? But leveraging contextual help and explanations throughout the process really helps the advisor understand what they're getting and how to leverage that better. So yeah, I do think the key is around customer success and not being afraid as technologists or technology vendors to make sure we're investing in that side of the business.
Yeah, we did a similar, I always tell everyone who reports to me, anyone listening to this who's ever reported to me will know this, but I'm always talking about taking the reactive and turning it proactive when it comes to like success and support. So like anytime that there's a reactive moment where you're kind of having to, they're calling you, they're emailing you, you know, they're having to come seek something from you, that's a data point to then go put in contextual help, or at least at minimum a knowledge article, or at least get it into the success program or training program or whatever it is, right? Because nobody wants to call. I think a lot of firms, they're like, we have this amazing support, you know, like we, you could call us anytime, you know, when the reality is nobody wants to call a support line. You know, that's not a selling point. Of course you want to have the support if you need it, but you're hoping to not need it. So it's such a good point.
I love that proactive approach. I love that. That's brilliant. Cause like, that's just save that. That's data. That's data right. for us to improve the platform. Yeah.
Yeah. And get it back to product so they can make it more, you know, it's like the voice, the whole voice of the customer program. So yeah, I think it's definitely such a good point on this topic for sure.
Most advisors say they want to grow, but real growth requires advisors to meaningfully connect with a new generation of investor clients with dramatically different expectations. The investing process of the past doesn't cut it. One-dimensional risk profiles that lead to cookie-cutter portfolios, reporting, and review meetings may have worked before, but new investors expect to feel heard and understood. That's why Seeds Investor is introducing Investing as an Experience. Seeds empowers advisors to deeply assess what's most important to every investor, from their unique perspectives on risk to their interests, their values, and beyond. A three-dimensional profile leads to a personalized portfolio that advisors can seamlessly implement alongside tailor engagement and insights, all in one digital experience. Streamline your investment operations, make investing more meaningful, and grow with Seeds. How does your investing experience stack up? Come find out at www.seedsinvestor.com. Tony, would you agree, when we look at like the Kitsie's map and how it's evolved over time, mm-hmm. And this is sort of like, you know, projecting out into the future of how that map will evolve, right? What's going to actually, you know, continue to win in terms of tech for advisors? What else is going to get built? If we really push it out, it's kind of like everything advisors do, arguably, is either already commoditized or will be commoditized, other than the ability to have a human conversation on a computer screen or in person with the customer and be the therapist and be the human person that they're seeking in a relationship about their financial security and financial freedom. And so like when I look back at the Kitsis map, to me, there was sort of the wave of how do RIAs become more efficient? Like it was really inward facing first, right? It was just like, how do we make these businesses more scalable for us, right? And simpler to run the business for us. Now we're in sort of the phase of how do we make the experience better for the end customer, right? For the person we actually work for. And we kind of think it's just going to continue in that direction, right? It's going to be technology for the sake of making the human more human, not less human, but more human scalably, more human with more people, more consistently. Sure. I'm just curious, like, again, you've been in the game for some time and watching that Kitsis map evolve. Do you agree with that? Is that how it continues? Just curious kind of how you think about that future. That's
a great question. And again, I'll try and answer this in I'll provide two answers. First of all, on advice, right? You talked about the commoditization of advice, right? And how like it feels like there's a bit of a race to zero in all these different areas of the business. I said this on a podcast. I'm going to repeat the phrase I said. It was not well. People didn't like it, but I had said that the last bastion of monetization is human advice. That's the that can shrink, but it can't shrink to zero, right? That's everything else can shrink to zero, right? Or almost zero, but human advice, like you said, financial therapy, right? Being that person you can call upon at any given time around those decisions will never go to zero, right? The human will always be at the epicenter of the relationship. And I've always said, and I always believe, that technology will only make you better, more efficient, right? Be able to grow your business better because it's augmenting your advice delivery and making things more efficient. Now, Michael Kitsis and I are very good friends, and I've been watching that map grow over time. And if, believe it or not, if you look at other industries, our map pales in comparison, right? If you look, for instance, I'm a marketer by heart. If you look at the MarTech map, it is like 10 times as awful, right? But here's what everyone does. Everyone looks at the map and they go, oh, there's too many things on this map. And I'm like, this is a mistake you're making, because you are, what you're doing is you're looking at this map and you're saying, me alone has too many choices from which to pick. I challenge the industry to look at the map from a different perspective, from not, no advisor provides the same advice. All advisors provide typically niche or niche for the weird people advice, right? Sorry, there was a whole topic during COVID around whether you pronounce it niche or niche. But anyways, everyone provides advice differently, right? From proposal generation, through delivering advice, through billing and everything else. So when I look at the map, I look at it from a multiple personas perspective, which means the map is actually not that big, right? It's not, there's not that much technology. It depends on what kind of advisor you are. Do you prefer to take the approach of a simple proposal based on asset allocation, based on risk and age? If so, this is the pathway you'd go on the Kitsis map. If you provide more, you know, a flat fee service, this is the pathway. So I think, and this is just my opinion, it's persona driven map. And if so, your choices are whittled down much further. Now, Michael might steal this idea and begin to provide that level of,
map.
Maybe he will. Yeah, he might. You know, I'll get credit for it. I'll make sure to get credit for it. But I think that's the idea, Zach, is that the map seems voluminous at first glance, but if you break it down to persona, it's really not.
Well, I totally agree with that. And I would say that the things that are sort of less persona specific, there's been consolidation in those areas, right? There's only a certain amount of things that are kind of like the pillars of what you need that are still those sort of backward facing parts of the business. Whereas everything else, to your point, that is sort of practice specific, how you position things, how you interact.
Yeah.
There's different tech to put those, you know, experiences around.
Not to interrupt you, but who wants to provide homogenous advice? Raise your hands. No one's going to raise their hand. Like, that's the thing. Like, and that's part of the all-in-one thing is like, hey, how can we be super homogenous, right? Yeah. Like, that sounds awful. Like I would... Quite frankly, like if I were to fire my advisor and go somewhere else and then get the exact same client portal experience, I would be devastated. You know what I mean? Yeah. That happens, right? That happens because there's only so many portals that are leveraged or what have you. So again, not to interrupt, but like
I think it's a really important point. And back to the T3 thing, it is almost like to some extent, there's a conference we're going to, just to shout out another conference called Shift, which is a newer conference. It's kind of about focused on human-centered advice. It's, you know, advisors who are really focused on that idea. And so certain technologies, including seeds, are going to that and are a fit for that because there's advisors who think in that way and that's the approach and it makes sense. Those dot connections, like all kidding aside, and hopefully you get credit for it, but if the map was designed in that way and the conferences were sort of broken out in that way, and if you think this way, you go over here. If you think this way, you go over here. The bizarre marketplace aspect of it, to your point, historically, it's hard for firms and the tech to connect those dots. Seeds isn't a fit for certain advisors, right? Specifically, if you still think your model portfolios are special, you're not a fit for seeds, right? If you think you want to understand investors in a deeper way and create a more personalized investing story, we're a fit. But if we, so I think, you know, for seeds specifically and for individual tech firms, our front door has to be clear too. So whether if you're at the right conference, and back to your, you know, your skill set in marketing, Kelsey always points out we need to attract as much as we repel. Like, you need to be clear about what your offering is and who you're a match for and who you're not. And so anyway, we need the Kitsis map version of that as well, I think, to your point.
Can we talk for a second about the marketing part of this, though? Because you're just talking, Tony, about you get the same like tech experience more or less in terms of your main, your primary tech stack from each advisor, which I think is true. And I do think advisors want to break away from that, but there is kind of that like late stage adopter mentality of like, until it's proven, I don't know if I want to go out there. But even separately from that, like the front door at advisory firms, this came up on the Jamie Hopkins episode we did. Like, everyone's websites look and say roughly the same thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very, and I know you're really passionate about marketing, so I just wanted to bring it up because it's a very similar thing. And there's like a very standard way of referring to services and what you do and who you do it for. And there's a fear of kind of breaking away from that mold. And there's a fear of breaking away from how do you then deliver on that after you acquire a customer as well, or even through. And you see so many firms with the lead gen, like that's like the lowest rated satisfaction is like lead gen tools for advisors, you know? But maybe you could speak a little bit about the marketing piece and like marketing tech for advisors and that whole space. Yeah. I feel like it's a similar issue.
I love that. I love that. And I'll start with this. You know, Kelsey, I love the whole like attract as many as repel. Right. And that's kind of who I am as a person, by the way. Like, I am what you see is what you get. Yeah. You know, if you don't like it, you probably have been friends anyways. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of how I go about like business, personal, everything. Like, and advisors need to do that as well, because so often you find that, to your point about websites and messaging, the lack of authenticity, right? Mm-hmm. And Zach, you used a phrase that I love to use, which is called cognitive dissonance, right? The idea where the subconscious, right, will consume information. And then when they meet the person that provided the information, they're like, wait a minute, that is not what I expected, right? There's a dissonance here. But back to the point about marketing and branding, many advisors are like, okay, I'm going to cast the widest net possible, and I'm going to use a sailboat in my logo, and it's going to be XYZ advisors, right? And then they're going to talk about these boring things around whatever it is and how they're going to provide advice. And like, if you are all things to all people, you're nothing to all people, because you are, again, back to the homogeneity of like the advice delivery. I don't have the statistic, but I feel like I have a finger on the pulse. I believe if you bifurcate traditional advice versus niche-based advice, the CAGR, the speed at which advice is growing, is probably logarithmically higher with niche-based providers, people who hone in on a very specific investing group, right? And the fear is, back to fear, is that that TAM, the total addressable market of that in my region, is too small. Mm-hmm. No, it's not, right? It's really not, quite frankly, unless you're like, you know, I mean, I could imagine that you could find some kind of niche that's too small. But the reality is if you select your niche and become authentic and use the words that you know will attract that type of prospect, you will be victorious for a few reasons. One, it'll be easier to onboard that client because they want to work with you. Two, it'll be easier to provide them advice, right? And it won't be hard. And three, you don't have to fire anybody because you don't have to fire a client because they've already decided against you at the beginning, right? So, and as it relates to marketing technology, I think there's still a bit of room to grow in that space in financial advisor marketing, because MarTech companies in our space try the homogenous approach. You know, they're just going to give you lead gen tools.
General lead.
Vanilla. Exactly. Generalist marketing. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the reason why you're not satisfied is because you're not attracting the right consumers, because they're not leveraging the niche messaging you provide, right? I'm on stage a lot around authenticity in this industry. And I'm telling you right now, when advisors brace their authentic selves, right, they're gonna cast that net out, and they're gonna attract a lot more individuals. I can tell you right now, I have a few different qualifications of who I am as a person, and if an advisor kind of met three or four of those, I would be so behooved to use them to because not only are they my advisor vendor, but they become a friend. confidant, someone I can trust and speak to in a different way. So I think the MarTech space is still weak as it relates to kind of niche-based marketing approaches and how do you truly attract individuals. But it also starts at home, right? It also starts at what is your website? How is your copy? What is the written language? Like when I have done some consulting for RIA firms and I challenge them on what is their voice, right? What is their brand voice? What are the words they use? Right. And like, what is that persona? Right. And just kind of the Carl Jung theory around like, you are one of these 12 things. This is how you're going to message yourself and who that'll attract. When you leverage those as the foundation around marketing, the growth, the velocity of growth is remarkable once that's done, because you've planted all the seeds and then no pun intended, and then the business comes to you. So, I mean, marketing is such a critical component, the financial advice space, that I think is, that's missed, quite frankly.
Yeah. I feel like there's also like kind of the end of that journey into being a customer. When you start talking about like pricing and fees and packaging, I think there's similarly a lack of I don't even know if it's creativity, but if you don't have like a defined persona, it's really hard to package your services in a way that actually makes sense. So I see a lot of firms who kind of lose momentum at that point, because it's just not clear, like, what is the trade-off? You're taking this fee, or you're charging this planning annual amount, or whatever it is that you're trying to do, but you're not clearly able to frame it around like the problem set. So I think it's really interesting to think about how firms could, I have seen some firms doing this really well. And to your point, the firms I've seen growing the fastest are firms who have a very specific target persona, and everything they're doing is really rising up to serve that person, whether it's for free in their marketing content, and then all the way through the end of converting them to a client and serving them.
I would argue real quick on pricing. I would argue that if you establish the right relationship and you build trust quickly, I don't think they care about how you price or charge, quite frankly, honestly. Like, I have, and maybe I'm terribly naive, but I have friends that are contractors, doctors, whatever, and they'll come in, they'll provide a service for me. And if I trust them, or like I consider them a friend in a very, you know, weird way, I won't even scrutinize a bill. Like, I'll just pay it. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, and it's, I believe that advisors, clients can get there. And oftentimes they do, but it's like, okay, this is how you charge. I really want your service so much. I don't really care how much you charge, because A, I trust you, and B, like, I'm sure it's fair. You know what I mean? Like, again, maybe I'm too naive, but I think that there is a way to get to that point.
Yeah.
Right? Where, but also, like, on the flip side, I'm a early investor in a company called Advice Pay, and they do fee for service planning. Charging for that. I don't think there's nothing wrong with providing multiple different pricing models, as long as it's not too challenging, right? As long as it's like the paperwork's not too hard, but again, embrace technology and that problem's solved. But I think if you figure out the niche correctly in your industry, like kind of your focus set, then you'll know how to charge for it, right? Because I think that it just kind of segues right into it.
Yeah, and how to talk about it instead of just saying, we do holistic financial planning. You know, like, that's in my opinion, it's just too broad, because it's just like what everyone's saying. So like, I could go next door. So yeah, I think you're right. It's that relationship. And then throughout, it all has to make sense. And if you know who you're talking to, it's that much easier to connect the dots, for sure.
Right.
We came out hot on, you know, calling out RIAs to figure out how and when to buy tech. But in their defense, I think we're hitting on, you know, the reality is firms, I think, know they have to do something. they generally have a sense of, you know, all those things coming from the outside that we swatted away as advisory firms, like the robos, Tony, you brought up earlier, and all these attacks from externally. I do think in general, RIAs recognize the internal realities of our businesses and the demographic changes that are happening, but they struggle to just like figure out where to start. And you describing that consultancy path of like getting into these firms, and I was listening to a podcast, you describing like they have to think of themselves as startups. And really, like, you know, just hit the pause button on what you did yesterday and come in and just put a clean slate on the table and really start to think about the future. And then it's everything, Kelsey, you know, you were just speaking to of like, you may be a 40-year-old RIA. What persona customer do you sell to? Why? Who is the customer? What are the services that align with it? What are we going to charge? What's the support model? And then how are we going to tell our story and market in a unique way? So like, these firms do need a moment to just kind of zoom, hit pause, zoom out, and think about that. And I think that's maybe a tangible takeaway for firms where it's like, you know, ironically, I'll make a point against myself of, before you go show up at T3 or any of these conferences, you need to do that. Just like, gut check the present reality of how you're running your business. What is the data telling you? And then, okay, tomorrow, who are we selling to exactly? What are our services? Like, get back to those basics. And then for tech firms and what we aspire to be doing at Seed. So if an RIA is a startup, technology firms are startups, obviously, but we need to act like consultants. We need to help these firms do what I just described, I think is important. And like we've touched on, arguably one of the things that's been kind of overlooked in our approach to selling into the industry. It's just buy the shiny object. I don't care how you run your business, just buy the shiny object. We're gonna solve this obscure problem for you. We see the success for ourselves, at least at Seeds. The more we help them do the back to the drawing board thing and get aligned, then we can be successful. Tony, lots of awesome insights you've provided. We really appreciate it. One of the things we do before we wrap is just kind of go around the horn on this topic or anything else. What are you excited about going on in your life, or anything that you're specifically learning that's interesting to you? But Kelsey, you can kick us off.
Yeah, I'm not going to give a learning one. I'll do excited because I'm about to take my kids to Disneyland on Wednesday of this week. So this will air. But we're going with another family that also has three kids. So we're going to have six kids with us who are 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So we are just conserving energy. We're preparing, but I'm also excited. And Tony, I'm sure you have, with five kids, I'm sure you have advice for someone like me going into this, but we're definitely excited. Also slightly nervous, but mostly excited. But what about you, Tony? What are you learning or excited about?
Oh boy. I have a couple of degrees in marketing. And I remember when I was at school and I was taking my gen eds, you know, in college, I was like, I don't know what to do. And the counselor was like, well, what do you like? And I'm like, well, I really enjoy the study of psychology and sociology and philosophy. And the counselor's like, well, get a degree in marketing. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, well, trust me, sociology and psychology, like, if you know that, you can perform marketing. And so, which leads me to my answer, which is, I love studying sociology and watching sociology. And as it relates to our industry, right now I'm reading a lot around the modern mind and how the modern mind is functioning and how the next generations of individuals, how fast they process information and how fast they come up with a response to that information. And that's driven in large part by the cacophony of all the things that they're exposed to every given day, but also the digital, how digital has changed it's really rewiring the brain. Right. And there is a direct correlation between how those brains are wired and how we need to provide services and market to these individuals. So reading about that. And in fact, I read this really fascinating article. It was a long form article around like the phase of life we're in. Right. It used to be art. Right. And now it's the production. And then now it's the release of dopamine. How, like, in the past, we were very complacent with studying and watching art and appreciating art. Now we want more animated things. And now the next generation wants dopamine release. And how fast can that go? And that ties back to the brain. So that's a very long and convoluted way of saying that right now I'm reading and learning a lot around the modern mind and how it's shifting based on all of these different kind of items, if it's the phone, if it's messaging, what have you, and how that relates to modern businesses and how we're going to attract those new consumers. That was a long,
everything. No, it's good stuff.
Response for the modern mind, but
it's the everything at your fingertips thing. So as much as hopefully we just helped firms not panic about technology. Now, Tony, Pandora's box of wait till the end consumer can access financial services via Neuralink. They can just think about it. And so we'll have to think about that future. That's awesome. So my quick thing is, and I probably am reusing this, but I am learning and excited about how awesome it is, kind of similar to the topic we're covering today, working with users of the thing that we're providing right now. So being in meetings, again, touching on sort of the full life cycle of a firm can sign a contract with Seeds, but then how are they using it? How are they getting those early wins? Being able to be in those conversations with advisors now on the success side of things is just so incredibly motivating as a founder and as an advisor, right? Seeing advisors use this thing that we're building is motivating, helps us kind of build what, you know, the future of the product's going to be, and really gives us a good sense of, again, on this topic, as we have more and more users, more broadly how the industry is thinking about technology in general. It's been pretty cool. So anyway, Tony, thank you so much for being with us today, sharing your insights. We appreciate it. Listeners, if you haven't checked out Seeds, please go do so. www.seedsinvestor.com. You can follow us on LinkedIn and X, and we will see you next time.
Seeds Investor LLC is a registered investment advisor. Advisory services are only offered to clients or prospective clients, or Seeds and its representatives are properly licensed or exempt. All information has been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy is not guaranteed. The information provided is for educational and informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice and should not be relied on as such. It should not be considered a solicitation to buy or an offer to sell a security.